This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. This week's primaries in a number of states and a special election in Ohio left us with two races that are still too close to call. While Donald Trump declared victory for Republicans in Ohio, that congressional race is still not over. And what do Tuesday's results portend for the November elections? Also, the Manafort trial, playing out like a soap opera, but what impact will it have on the president? Plus, this week, another big supporter of Donald Trump landed in legal trouble. New York Congressman Chris Collins charged with insider trading. Joining us to break it down, that and more, this week in politics, political junkie Ken Rudin. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Frank. Welcome back.
It is a pleasure to be here.
You know, I understand you were with Mike Pence on the Space Command project.
That's
where you were?
That's right. I do maintenance on all the satellites and just got back.
Welcome home.
Actually, I'm from Chris Collins' territory. We'll talk about that in a minute. But let me talk about Ohio first. Nearby, Republican Troy Balderson leads very small margin over Democrat Danny O'Connor. Whatever the outcome in that race, the fact that it was this close, Ken, should be of concern to Republicans?
That's absolutely true. I mean, whether Troy Balderson wins or loses, and he has about a 1,500 vote, 1,200 vote, and of course there's thousands of provisional ballots that have yet to be counted. But this is a seat that has not gone for the Democrats since 1980. The guy held it for one term, and before that, 1936. So the fact that this is a historical Republican district, and the fact that Balderson barely has a lead here, if that's what's going to happen in solid Republican districts, what about all those Republican seats that are really marginal around the country? And I think that's the kind of scare that Ohio 12 gave to Republicans around the country.
Also too close to call the Kansas governor's primary. Tell us about that.
Well, this got national interest because Kris Kobach, the Secretary of State of Kansas, he challenged the incumbent governor there in the Republican primary. And right now, it's only 121 votes Kris Kobach is leading. Of course, if he does lose, it'll be all those illegal votes, you know, those people who vote illegally. Kris Kobach is a guy who has got a national acclaim for his vote fraud efforts, you know, real and imagined vote fraud.
Mm-hmm.
But Kris Kobach, he was endorsed by President Trump, and yet, yes, with all the votes counted, it's now down to 121 votes.
All right, and let's talk about Missouri now. An upset there. A longtime prosecuting attorney in St. Louis County, Bob McCullough, lost the Democratic primary to an attorney, Wesley Bell, and there, what happened in Missouri, of course, the shooting death there of Michael Brown played a very important part in that race.
Absolutely. That was interesting to watch. But I think the big story in Missouri was the fact that a measure on the ballot that would have retained the state's right to work law was overwhelmingly defeated. I mean, it's rare that labor, that the unions win any victories anymore because of the fact that they're outgunned, outmanned, and certainly outfinanced. But labor got a big victory in Missouri with a defeat of the right to work legislation. And so it's one of those few cheerings you'll hear from labor in recent years.
Well, the other way that labor can cheer was its impact on the primary, the gubernatorial primary in Michigan, the Democratic primary, where labor's weight played an important part in that primary, didn't it?
It did, and I think the stronger Democrat won. It was not the candidate endorsed by Bernie Sanders, but that's, you know, we always talk about the dilemma that the Republicans have and the battles within the GOP, but Democrats have their own fractiousness going on between the more progressive wing of the party, led by Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the woman who won the Democratic nomination in that Queens and Bronx district, who has now become a national progressive hero. I mean, basically, the feeling in Michigan is that an important state, obviously the governorships in 2018 are crucial because we have redistricting coming up in 2 years, and that's going to be very, very important to see who controls future sessions of the House, future Congresses with the members of the House. So the Democrats got their nominee they wanted, but I think the Republicans got their nominee as well. Bill Schuette, the former long-term state attorney, long-time state attorney general. It's going to be a classic battle with tons of money, but Labor, I think, you know, is going to have an opportunity. This is a very good state for Labor to flex its muscles. We'll see if it has any power left.
Yeah, I want to stick with the Democrats for a moment because it is this tension between the old world institutional Democratic Party that went to the large institutions like labor unions for its support, and then the new wave of progressives represented by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, among others, who are breaking away from those and saying, look, we have grassroots support here. We have people of color. We've got minority votes, voters and progressives that actually make up the majority. Let's go in that direction. And this, it seems to me that Tuesday's races suggest that decision has not yet been made. This is still very much a party in contention over
those two camps.
True,
because we saw a few months ago in that congressional race in southwest Pennsylvania where a candidate ran as a pro-gun, pro-life Democrat who said, I don't want Nancy Pelosi to be the representative for my party in November. So clearly, one size does not fit all for the Democrats. What may work in Queens and the Bronx and maybe in other districts and around the country may not work in some more Republican conservative districts that the Democrats want to take in November. So again, the party is not on the same page, but who knows? I mean, if there's anti-Trump feeling, and that still remains to be seen, but if there's anti-Trump feeling, maybe all the Democrats need is a D next to their name, just like the R's got in 2010 when you were running against Obama in the 2010 and 2014 midterms. All you had to be was a Republican. It didn't matter what kind of Republican. Democrats may have the same fortune in November.
Or just more excitement among progressives and Democrat of every stripe, whether you're sort of a mainstream, you know, sort of Humphrey Democrat or a new progressive Bernie Sanders Democrat. If you show up at the polls, that may make a huge difference, given what we see in terms of Donald Trump support. It looks a lot like Mitt Romney. So that part hasn't changed. More Democrats show up in November could be a different story.
That is absolutely true. And if there's any proof that every vote counts, as we said, look at Kansas Governor Kris Kobach's lead is 121 votes. Every vote counts. And we know how many people did not vote in 2016. Maybe some voters may have learned the lesson of 2016.
On to the Paul Manafort case. That trial has become quite a daytime drama. It's got his former partner, Rick Gates, turning states, admitting everything from secret overseas accounts to cheating on his wife. I don't want to talk about that trial so much. What does it have any impact on the Trump presidency, do you think?
I honestly don't know. Look, the fact is he is Donald Trump's former campaign manager. So that in itself means it has some tie-in to Donald Trump. And the fact that Robert Mueller is the guy who brought this to trial, I mean, obviously this is part of the whole scheme of things. But when you look at what Manafort is up on, you know, bank fraud and tax evasion and hiding money in overseas bank accounts and lying and cheating and stealing, I mean, these are not good things. And of course, if we want to drain the swamp, maybe Paul Manafort is the first body we take out of that swamp. But I don't know exactly what it has to do with Trump, except for the fact that Manafort is also in trial, another trial next month, more about his roles with pro-Russian leaders in Ukraine. And again, if the argument is that the Trump campaign was very cozy with Moscow during the 2016 campaign, whatever Manafort's relationship was with Russia could be very paramount to proving Mueller's case.
All right, we'll talk about that. And Chris Collins, this is a Republican representative from upstate New York. As I said, that's precisely where I was vacationing, right up there. In fact, he called me, told me to buy low, sell high. And I thought that was very good advice. But now accused of insider trading. This is first of all, ground zero. That's Trump country up there. And he was an early supporter and now accused of insider trading. Tell us more.
Not only is he an early supporter, he was the first member of Congress to endorse Donald Trump in 2015. It's also the most conservative district in New York. Donald Trump won it overwhelmingly in 2016. It's really, I think part of it is old Jack Kemp country. Of course, Jack Kemp would not recognize what's happened to the new Republican Party, but is very conservative. And yet you have this member of Congress who also served on this biotech board. Now, I didn't even know members of Congress can serve on corporate boards. I thought that there would be some kind of a conflict there. But the fact is, he served on this board, learned that one of its products was not working. It was an MS drug, and it didn't do what it was supposed to do. Within seconds of him getting the bad news, he calls his son and says, sell, sell, sell. And his son tells his wife and her family, sell, sell, sell. So that sounds like the absolute inside, the definition of insider trading. The fact is, whether he's, well, he's already been indicted. The fact is, even if he's convicted before the trial, he can't get off the ballot. We have seen instances in the past where members of Congress have been indicted, still ran for Congress, and still won. Of course, they resigned when they went to prison afterwards. Michael Grimm of Staten Island, that happened to him. But again, this is the number one Trump supporter in the state. He appears on cable TV all the time because of his close relationships with Trump. And again, once again, we're talking about draining the swamp. This is, I mean, the guy's under indictment, and he's the top Trump supporter.
As you said, he can't drop out of the race easily, but you've got about 30 seconds left. What happens if he's forced to, say he wins, let's say he wins a re-election, he's forced to resign. Does the governor appoint? What happens to his seat?
In House races, there's no such thing as appointing. There has to be a special election. No. That's what happened to Michael Grimm last time. Indicted, re-elected, went to prison, had to resign. There was a special election. That's what would happen if Collins left Congress.
Always a pleasure, Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank. And again, welcome home.
Good to be here. Just ahead, we're going to talk to a writer whose work has been described as Appalachian noir. Stay with us on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio.